Let's go around the NFL in the loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula on Houston Sports Leader.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
Sports Radio 610.
I always am about to jump off sides with that intro. As soon as I hear the name, I'm like, all right, time to go. Nope, we got to make sure we let you know. It's in loop on Sports Radio 610. We're going around the NFL right now. This just came through, yesterday. And this is a huge thing to me. I do wonder if you also view it in the same way. Because I've been watching the space of private equity trying to get into sports. College football also is a big one as well. But the NFL has just voted to allow private equity interests to have ownership stakes in the NFL. And so that the highly anticipated vote ultimately leaves it to where up to 10% of an individual's team's equity can be purchased by private equity investors. And the thing about this is, like, they did limit it a little bit. I think only 8 firms as of right now would be able to be involved in this, so it would not be like fully out there. And then also teams would have to be in for 6 years, so it's not like you could go and start trading NFL ownership like stock. You know, this would be something where you'd have to get in and hold a little bit. But what are your initial reactions to the idea that NFL, in an attempt to bring even more money into what is a crazy cash cow, is now opening this up to not just, individuals as ownership or having ownership stakes, but also just private equity firms?
Yeah, 2 things jumped out at me when I saw the report of this, and now it is happening. So, number one, completely makes sense and completely predictable because franchises are so expensive now. There are a lot of billionaires in the world, and by a lot, I don't even know what that number, 1,000? 2,000, 10,000.
That's a question.
I don't know. I don't know. But it's a very limited number of billionaires. And within those billionaires is an even more limited number of billionaires that would have an interest in buying an NFL team.
Oh, shout out to Forbes for having a real-time billionaire
list. Let me guess. Guess how many billionaires there actually are in the world. I'm going to say 12,000. You got the number?
I am looking. I'm trying to actively scroll.
I'm going to say...
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Mackenzie Scott.
I'm going to say 15,000.
I'm scrolling.
Yeah.
On the 4. Because they actually have a list
as
here.
Of 2024. Shout out to AI, man. It came right. It popped right up.
Well, if you're using AI, I do wonder if it is actually correct.
We are both way high. Guess how many billionaires there are in the world. According to AI, anyway.
I know that there's at least probably...
5,000?
What do you think, Reggie?
Well, Wikipedia is telling me that 2,700?
2,781.
Yeah.
Damn. That's it?
So that's kind of my point on this. Mm. Like, that, there's a very limited number of billionaires, and within that 2,781, there's an even more limited number of those that would be interested in buying an NFL team. So if you're going to continue to exist and see the values of these organizations go up, you need private equity to bolster that, right?
In some way, sure. But I think that this is where Mark Cuban might eventually be vindicated, because I think he and would probably imagine that this would come a little bit further or a little bit sooner when he said that, hogs get slaughtered. Right.
Yeah,
The idea of like, hey, you get too big for your britches and ultimately you set yourself up to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And look, now as you continue and look, they've always been trying to look for the money. They've been searching for the money and chasing that. But at what point does that become detrimental is the question there. And there's someone on the text line who seems to have a perspective that maybe is a little bit closer to where I generally am. From the 713, private equity in the NFL is basically encouraging more Jack Easterby situations. Private equity kills every industry it touches. This is not a good idea. That might be maybe a little bit extreme of the perspective on for me, but private equity does it. Like, they're always trying to squeeze as much money as possible out of an industry.
Yeah.
And that alignment or that particular perspective and end goal does not often align with the things that they're getting into, right? Yeah. I think for those of us that are in media, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen media companies, private equity comes in and their goal is to make money, and the media company's goal in theory is to provide good content or whatever. And in trying to squeeze out value, they squeeze out the mission of that thing and leave it crippled from where it was. NFL, I do wonder, like, is there more efficiency to be done within the NFL? Because that's what private equity is going to demand and want from this, is squeezing out more value. And I'm wondering, how much more value can you squeeze out from an NFL product?
Well, I'm glad he texted that from the 713, because that leads directly to my second point on this. Number one, you had to get private equity for the reasons I just said. Number two, 10%. Remember that. They can only, private equity can only claim up to 10% of an NFL franchise.
For now.
Well, I think forever. Because because these owners, they hold on to the principal ownership 51% like grim death. Like sure. they hold on to that because these owners, it is the most exclusive club in sports outside of maybe some, you know, Premier League ownership groups, but nobody likes to talk about that.
Well,
it's true though. It's true.
Yeah.
But they hold on to 51% or more like grim death because it is that important to be in that club. So I don't think private equity is going to bolster the value of these teams and help supplement it. But I don't think these owners are ever going to say, yeah, we're going to give up control, because then the NFL won't want that either. Because the other text that we got is absolutely right. Private equity do strip a lot for profit.
Yes.
The NFL is never going to allow you to do that. They want these teams to organize, to get bigger and bigger, and the league to get bigger and bigger.
It looks good for the brand.
And it looks good for the brand, but they don't want you to strip profit from it. You know, so I think it's actually, I'm not trying to be the man here, but I think it's actually a very good idea for the NFL.
So what would that look like? I'm trying to learn. So what would that look like if a private, if somebody...
An equity firm?
Yeah.
Well, they would get up to 10%, and they could help, every bit of the bottom line.
You're just an... if you're not a primary... If you're not the primary owner of the team... You're basically an investor in the team. You put money in. And
so is this like a celebrity just all of a sudden?
No, it's a group of investors.
Okay.
It's a group of investors, and they're going to get profits like everybody, every other minority owner. It's basically just expanding minority ownership.
In some ways,
yeah. Which I think is good. And I say that because I think they're going to stay at 10%. Maybe they'll go a little higher, but never more than that.
I think that this could be a creep, and maybe this is like a future situation for the NFL where in the 10, 15 years, they're going to have to combat with the idea of, hey, we need to be a little bit careful about how much we allow private equity to ultimately become the deciding factor. Because, again, interests are what we're talking about. And when with private equity, and this is where you're coming in, Fig, the only interest that binds the group of people that have put in on the equity firm is making money.
Yes.
At least when you have owners of teams, there's different interests involved. Sometimes there, a lot of times there's civic pride that's an interest involved. Obviously making money is ego. One of those, but ego is another one.
Yeah.
There's other interests that are involved. I think my thing with the problem with private equity is that it ends up being bottom line driven entirely, to the point where sometimes that we know if you're strictly bottom line driven, that can take you to some unsavory places at times. So this is an interesting step, and what in the immediate term, it's going to mean more money for the NFL, which look, great for those people who are invested who can make advantage of that. I'm always interested from the fan perspective, what does this mean? And in the meantime, I don't think it means a lot, but I do worry if in the future it could possibly mean that fan interests and those types of things are not taken into account as much because of the profits.
Yeah, and I like this topic. It's kind of in the weeds, but I like it. I think it's important to the NFL. From the 713 said, my comment fell flat for him because Mark Cuban sold his stake but was allowed to keep running the team. This isn't going to be good. Mark Cuban didn't sell to a private equity firm. He sold to a billionaire.
Yeah, and bigger billionaire, money.
A bigger billionaire. So this is not private equity. It was completely different.
Yeah, and then also, like, Mark Cuban is now a minority owner. Mm-hmm. Right? That's basically what happened there. And that's and maybe I'm making too much of this. I always have to be very careful about towing that line, because I'm one of those people that can look at things and be like, oh, well, where is the doomsday within this, right? It's possible that this is just more of the people at the top that are rich make more money and everything keeps rolling along as is, which I think you're kind of establishing in some ways.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am.
So we'll see how that ultimately goes, but the NFL has stepped into that place where they're allowing private equity interest. Now, where this could get interesting is sovereign money going to be able to be involved? So something like the public investment fund in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Now, how does that then get involved? Do you have the Saudis getting involved in NFL, because again, this is another marketplace that makes, that seems to be making money hand over fist.
Sure.
And then you get into like the public relations of
that's
Saudi
all it
Arabia
is, though.
Involved in those.
That's all
things.
It is, though, is public relations. As long as they stay at 10%, and rest assured, if I had to predict, the answer to your question is yes. Yes, the Saudis will be involved as long as it stays 10%. I think the NFL is gonna or thereabouts. The NFL is going to be more than fine.
All right, I'm going to cut us out of the weeds now. We were definitely very far in.
I like those kinds of discussions.
Yeah, I do as well.
Me too.
Yeah, I like those.
Probably save it for a podcast. But,
y'all want to laugh a little bit?
Let's laugh.
So the obviously we have, you know, cut down situation. So, you know, general managers are in front of the media. In fact, Nick Caseri was in front of the media. We'll hear a little bit of that coming up next. But right now, George Payton, who is the general manager of the Broncos, stepped forward and he was talking about various things, including one of his quarterbacks, rather. Obviously, Bo Nix won the starting gig, but the question was whether they would keep Jarrett Stidham and or Zach Wilson on the initial roster, release one. They kept all three. And in trying to explain that, Payton said, "We think highly of the quarterback room. I really like the process. I thought the competition brought out the best in really all of the quarterbacks. All these guys support each other. They compete. They work well together, so on and so forth." He also went as far as to say that Zach Wilson has starter traits all over.
What? Say that again.
George Payton said that quarterback Zach Wilson, yes, that Zach Wilson that was seeing ghosts, the one that was, oh no, the seeing ghost was Sam Darnold, but it was with the Jets and looked kind of woeful last season, all those things. He has starter traits all over.
I mean, maybe they misquoted him. He said he has starter traits all over against the Texans. Because that's the only time he looked like a starter.
Nah, he looked great against the Texans,
awesome,
man.
He looked awesome against the Texans. But no, yeah, that's one of those where, you know, you just got to laugh. And oh, by the way, you're probably going to hear that again tomorrow.
Why is that?
We might have cap or no cap tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Excellent. We mentioned yesterday, and okay, I'll put a dollar in here for this. It's just a news note, but whatever. The Cowboys had Dalvin Cook into whatever. I'll pay for it. They had Dalvin Cook into work out. They ultimately will sign him, and so they add yet another old dude to the running back.
The Washateria, man.
The Washateria?
Down the Washateria. Yeah.
Does the way that they're having to handle their running back room make you feel just a little bit better about the way that this running back room is?
Yes, absolutely. it makes me remember the days of Alfred Blue and all that here, where you're like, what do they see in this cat?
Nah, that's looking like David Johnson.
Or David Johnson.
Yeah. Man, there's been
some bad ones.
It's a running back situation, baby.
Hey, look who you're talking to, man.
Buddy. Shout out to the Cowboys, making sure to hold down that worst running back.
They're coming at you with Zeke and Dalvin Cook, baby.
Man.
Been great 4 years ago. Just a great running back room in 2020. How about this? Figgy, you mentioned this, but I had not realized it. Some of the oddities that can happen during cutdown days, you can see some funny things. Speaking of running back rooms, in your hometown of Cleveland, how many running backs do the Cleveland Browns have, Fig?
These dudes got two.
Now, how many quarterbacks?
They got four quarterbacks. These dudes got four quarterbacks, two running backs, and those two are not Nick Chubb.
Yeah, it's innovative. It's an innovative approach is what it is. What in the hell is going on in Cleveland?
Man.
You talk about somebody that's going to have to work the waiver wire or answer some questions. Like, wait a minute. You got four quarterbacks on the roster and two running backs?
If you got four, what's that old saying people always say?
If you got two starting quarterbacks, you got none.
Yeah,
if you got two, you got none. If you got four, you got problems.
And see, I know we was kind of making a big deal about Davis Mills, who looked good, and Tim Boyle and all that. Dog, I'm perfectly fine with having two quarterbacks on the roster, man. That's a good thing.
Absolutely.
If you look at some of the best teams in the league that have the best quarterbacks, they have two quarterbacks, the starter and the backup. So for the simple fact they got three backups, that is crazy.
Do they feel like they can have, I don't know, Dorian Thompson Robinson or Tyler Huntley tote the rock or something? Are they playing special teams? That's the question to ask, right?
Yeah.
Hey, man, we got four quarterbacks.
Is Jameis playing running back?
He might.
That reminds me of early Tampa days when they had Jameis out here running the zone read because of racism. Like, I can only call it racism because I don't know how you watch Jameis Winston's big, slow, lumbering ass and thought, You know what we got to do?
Yeah.
Run him.
Thought he could run the ball.
Yeah, no, God, no.
I never looked at him like that.
And I'm not going to lie, a little mini confession here early. I had to look up who the two running backs were. I had no clue.
Yeah.
Jerome Ford. Pierre Strong Jr.
Yeah. No, those are not starting running backs at all.
Best of luck to that team, I guess. Another year where they ask the defense to carry what they're doing there. Mm-hmm. So good luck to Kevin Stefanski and them. So there you go. I thought that was a fun oddity when it comes to cutdown day.
Yeah, it was.
Nice to have a little bit of context on what's happening here with the Texans when you look at it and you're like,
we over here complaining about too many running backs. They got barely none. Yeah.
Barely any.
I'm like, y'all ain't keep Deontay Foreman.
That's why it was weird.
There was definitely some more oddities when it came to cutdown day. Maybe we'll circle back around and talk about those a little bit later. But some of the things is like quite a few kickers cut, especially kickers that were drafted. Andres Carlson with the Packers, Chad Ryland with the Patriots. So two of the three kickers that were drafted last season cut by their teams, which it makes you look around and go, hey, man.
We're all right.
We started having these kickers being drafted a little bit more highly. Is that something that we need to reevaluate when it comes to how people go about draft?
Totally agree. I think you can always find them. Now there's going to be the occasional, you know, superstar kicker, but that is very rare.
There you go.
Very rare.
That's Around the NFL here on In the Loop Sports Radio 610. We took a little bit of time, but that private equity thing really.
I like that.
It gets under my skin, that, man.
We got in the weeds, baby. We acted like we knew all about that
business. Should do it more often, man.
Yeah, right. And I have not run business the first. So take that, I guess, with a grain of salt. Yeah. Coming up next, though, a man who is handling his business, Nick Caserio. He got the roster cut down to 53 yesterday, and he stepped in front of the media earlier today. What were our takeaways from what he said? We'll find out next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
We're In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Hope you're having a wonderful Wednesday thus far in H-Town. Always text in 713-572-4610. Catch us on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and Twitch. Available all different sorts of places for you so we can hang out with you. Get you through the middle of your day here, Sports Radio 610. Nick Caserio talked to the assembled media. Is that what they call them?
I think that's what they use.
Excellent. after the 53-man cut down, just to kind of get a little insight into how that came together and... You know, what all is still involved now with this team as they move forward and look towards the Colts in a week and a half. So with that being the case, no further ado, this is Nick Caserio earlier today.
There's going to be multiple moving parts between now, between the start of the season, between week one, throughout the season. So, you know, we just keep the players that we feel make the most sense, understanding that they're here until they're not. So we'll take it one day at a time, and then we'll go from there.
You guys, like, were able to accomplish, what do you feel like you guys, the team, were able to accomplish throughout training camp?
I think we put a good foundation in place, get the team ready to play. I mean, now the focus is on Indianapolis. So, I mean, what happened, you know, over the last 6 weeks, I mean, honestly, is in the past. So now the focus is on Indy. We're going to start preparing for a really good football team who presents a lot of challenges on, you know, in all three phases, honestly. So, I mean, hopefully we put together a decent team that gives us an opportunity to be competitive on Sunday each week. And, you know, the first opportunity is going to be against Indy here, you know, in a couple weeks or less than a few weeks. So.
Now that you have the roster set, is there any position that you're looking to add depth to as far as some of those players who will cut from other teams?
Yeah, we'll look at that. I mean, there was almost 1,000 names that were on the wire here last night. So, I mean, we'll work through it. So teams have put together their practice squad. So there might be some players that get claimed. I mean, typically there's about 30 to 35 players that get claimed. So call it one a team. Not necessarily one per team, but just from a number standpoint. So... And then players that are claimed, there's going to be an offset, right? Somebody's going to get released. There's a good chance that player is going to go to that respective practice squad. So teams have put together a practice squad, ourselves included. And you're going to carry some depth on the roster. You're going to carry some of your depth off the roster. So wherever our depth lies, whatever it is, every player that's in the building is preparing to play on Sunday. So that's how we approach it. Like, we don't care, like, where you come from, who gets ready to play. Whoever we think can help us win that Sunday, like, they're going to be active for the game. We're going to have to make, you know, 5 to 7 players inactive each week. So we'll go through the process like we do every week. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, there'll be some movement. There'll be some players that I'm sure that we'll look at. And, you know, whether it's this week or, you know, next week or workouts or whatever it might be. But I think we have a decent idea about what's available, what's out there. I think you got to be realistic about, like, are you bringing just a name tag in, or are you bringing a player in specifically for a particular reason that's going to fill a particular role? So, you know, we'll handle it. You know, our scouting staff's done a great job. I would say Lip, Chris Blanco, DJ Debick, you know, the pro staff, Steve Cargyle, they've done a great job of going through the league, coming through their teams, knowing what's available, what's not, what's on rosters, what's going to probably be on practice squads, what are our opportunities. So if there's something out there that makes sense, we'll look into it. If there's not, then we won't.
The emergency quarterback rule being vetoed altered how you're thinking or how you constructed the roster?
Yeah, I think that whole story is basically a non-story. I mean, we knew this in March. I mean, it's no different than last year. You either have two players on a roster, one player on a practice squad, or you carry three quarterbacks on a roster, and then you have the ability to make a guy an emergency quarterback. So, honestly, it's a non-story. It didn't affect us. I mean, maybe some other teams, but I mean, this isn't like any news to us. So,
as far as that goes, Case obviously isn't going to play. What do you envision his role being this year, and could you see him being a coach in the future?
It's a good question, man. You probably got to ask him about the coach part, but. You know, Case has been a good player for this organization for a long time. I mean, his leadership, his toughness, his intelligence. So it's unfortunate that he's not going to be able to play football this year. So, I mean, hopefully he's around the team and around the building. He can be an asset to the team, to that room. So a lot of respect and appreciation for Case, what he's done, not only over the last year or so, or year and change, but over the course of his career. I mean, you're talking about a guy that one drafted that's basically made it, I don't know, 12, 13 years, whatever it's been. So it's a credit to him. So it's unfortunate, you know, difficult situation. I'm sure there's a lot of emotion involved relative. I don't want to speak for him, but as far as what he does moving forward, ultimately that's going to be his choice. But I think whatever he decides to do, he's going to be really good at it.
On British Brooks, what did you see from him at North Carolina? What did he show you out on the field this year in the preseason?
Yeah, consistent, dependable, tough, good size, good playing strength, smart, can handle multiple roles offensively and in a kicking game. So, I mean, British just shows up, doesn't say much, and does his job, which, I mean, the more people like that we have around here, the better for everybody. So, you know, he's earned his opportunity. He's earned his way onto the team. We'll see if he's able to stay on the team. But, I mean, he's here for a reason. It's credit to him. It's credit to DB, you know, and the work that everybody has put in with him.
As you watched what happened on kickoffs throughout preseason and camp and everything, how did that, if at all, impact the roster?
Yeah, not too much. I mean, I think everybody probably played it pretty close to the vest. I mean, I think, honestly, there was a big outbreak of long returns, it seems like, this last week up to that point. I mean, there was a few returns that popped. So the rules are the rules. I mean, it doesn't sound like anything's going to change drastically. I mean, I think the private equity discussion was a bigger discussion than a kickoff return discussion yesterday. So, but there'll probably be a little bit more strategy that goes into how do you want to handle the return element, how do you set up the return, who do you put back there. I would say what you're going to see different body types respective to different teams. So, like, as an example, wouldn't be surprised if Indianapolis, you know, uses the defensive tackle from Northwestern on kickoff coverage, right? You know, he's an athletic guy, he's big, you know, big ass guy, 285, 90 pounds, that runs good, is athletic. Could potentially create some problems. So, all right, how do you compensate for that? How do you prepare for that? Like, we may not have an equivalent player. You might have to do something else. So I'm just using that as one example. Whether or not Indianapolis does that, I mean, they can make their own decisions, but I wouldn't be surprised if that actually happens. So we'll look at it. We spent a lot of time in the spring and in training camp. You know, we've talked in a building about some different things. So, you know, we'll go out there. We understand what the rules and parameters are. So we'll try to put together a good plan each week and try to take advantage of our opportunities.
There was a lot of banter that went on about John McGee and Xavier Hutchinson. You know, a lot of it was social media, a lot of radio fluff. What did you see from those two in training camp?
Yeah, Sarge, you could tell me what that says. I don't really pay attention to any of that. So I think what you saw with both players was an improvement, was they were available, they were on the field, and they continued to get better, and they took advantage of their opportunities. So I think Hutch was probably one of our most consistent, most dependable players from the beginning of training camp until the end. I'd say Mechie took advantage of his opportunities there at different points. So, I mean, it's all you're looking for. Training camp is about putting the foundation in place, kind of the earlier question, what are we trying to accomplish? Put the foundation in place. Look for individual improvement. Look for collective improvement. And I'd say those two players are good examples of that. Now, I mean, the hard work starts. So, I mean, there's a lot that went into it to get to this point, but, I mean, now the hard work starts, and, you know, we'll see what are our options game day, what's the role, how can we use them. It's not just about offense and defense, it's about the kicking game as well. So that goes into a lot of discussions that we have, not only daily and weekly, but DeMeco has with Frank and Bobby and Matt on the defensive side of the ball. So, I mean, those two players are great kids. They work really hard. They care a lot about football, and they've went out there and they've improved. So we'll see where that goes from here.
Did a player like Noah Brown, did availability just finally catch up to him?
Yeah, I mean, Noah's a good football player. I mean, Noah's going to be on a team. There's no question about it. He helped us win, honestly, probably two games last year by himself. So, I mean, good football player. We understood going into this as we constructed the team, Cody, that, you know, weren't going to be able to keep everybody, right? So, got to make some hard decisions. I'd say that was a difficult decision. So we kept the players that we felt right now that could help us the most. I mean, I'd say Noah, I mean, certainly part of that discussion. In the end, we just made the decision to move on. But I have a lot of respect for Noah. He's probably one of the toughest players that we had on his football team. Took advantage of opportunities last year. And, I mean, again, he won us two football games literally by himself, the Cincinnati game, the Tampa Bay game. I mean, I don't know, he had 1,000 yards receiving in two games, whatever it was. But good football player. He's going to be on a team fairly soon and probably going to help a team win. So, I mean, those are the players that, you know, you wish them well. Just can't keep everybody, but certainly wish him well and, you know, have a lot of respect for Noah.
In regards to the CBS crowd, you got a lot thrown at him this offseason, Bears expectations and attention. How do you think he's handled that so far?
Yeah, I think in the end, he's got to keep the focus on football. You know, I think he's been able to do that. So, I mean, now, like, the offseason's over, basically. So, with the regular season's here. Now it's what are you doing on a day-to-day basis to get ready for the next opponent, which in this case, Indianapolis, which, again, going back to an earlier discussion, I mean, this would be one of the best fronts we face all year. So, really good front. I mean, two of the best linebackers, arguably, in the league. I'd say speed's probably underrated. Nobody talks about speed. Everybody talks about Zaire, rightfully so, because he had 150 tackles last year. So, we got a big challenge in front of us with Indianapolis. So, I think the focus now is on football. Whatever happened in the offseason, I mean, look, players deal with a lot of stuff during the offseason, and, you know, I'd say CJ's handled himself very well. He's very mature, he's very professional, but in the end, the focus is on football, because in the end, a lot of that stuff that comes along with being a good player, the opportunities that you get, are a result of what you do on a football field. So, let's get, in the end, the focus always goes back to football, and I think that's where his focus is and where the rest of our team's focus is.
James didn't have a ton of production in the preseason. What did you see from him that allowed him to make the roster, and how much special teams play
for him? Yeah, look at everything. I mean, it's practice, it's games. I mean, some guys get more opportunities in games than others. Some guys get, you know, opportunities in practice. I would say the joint practices, you know, the teams use that sometimes as almost another, I would say, scrimmage or game, if you will. So Damian's been available. He's been out there. He's been productive with his opportunities in practice. I mean, limited opportunities in the game, but, I mean, we're glad he's on the team, so we'll see what his role is moving forward. Ultimately, it doesn't matter what I think or what DeMeco thinks. It's what the player does with the opportunities, and then the players are going to determine how big of a role they do or do not have on a week-to-week basis.
You said before the season started, you said before training camp started, excuse me, that it was going to be hard to make this team. When you look at players like Kamari Lassiter and Kalen Bullock, when you're out here observing, what did you see?
Yeah, two young football players that we think can help us win. So, I mean, I think they've been very consistent going back to the spring. I mean, I'd say I know a lot of people might be surprised about Kamari Lassiter. I mean, the least surprised people are the people in our building. I mean, starting with myself and DeMeco. So, this guy's a good football player. I mean, go back and watch any film you want to watch at Georgia. I mean, played against the best people, very consistent. Same things that we've seen. So, we're glad he's here. I'd say CB's done a good job. CB's got playmaking ability. He could take the ball away. I mean, even a play he made against, was it Pittsburgh or whatever it was? I mean, middle of the field, it wasn't an interception, but not too many players can get to that ball. So they're two good young players. They're two really good kids that care a lot about football. So, you know, we'll see. Hopefully they can help us win some games. And if they can't, then, you know, we'll find somebody else.
You know, when it comes to making some cuts versus availability, even though they might have some guaranteed money, or just, you know, if they're not available, just letting them go. Like, what's kind of that balance of, like, looking at the roster and contract construction versus the actual reduction on
the
field?
I'd say the contract is probably, like, the least of our concerns. Like, the contract's a contract. So we're not making decisions based on somebody's contract. We're making a decision based on the information that we have, what we see on the field, and what we think is best for the team. So, I mean, the contracts, I would say the amount of time we spent on that, like, that's more of a March discussion. So what goes on in training camp, I would say it's de minimis.
With Cam Akers' remarkable comeback, torn his Achilles twice before. Comes in here, doesn't look like that's ever happened before. What did you see from him in terms of resiliency from that and plays he made?
Yeah, it says a lot about Cam. I mean, you know, player we brought in, I don't know, it was right before training camp or during training camp, and he went out there and kind of took advantage of the opportunity. So obviously it says that he's put in a lot of work to get to this point. I'd say it just gives you like an appreciation, I'd say, for the level of like athlete that you're dealing with. I mean, a normal human being, I mean, to come back from something like that, I mean, that list is pretty short. So say Cam's done a good job. He's been out there, you know, he's been available, he's took advantage of his opportunities. You know, we'll see what that looks like here moving forward.
Is there any difference between year one? Was there any difference between year one and year two of D'Amico going through these roster cuts?
The great thing about him, he's the same guy every day. Like, pick a day of the week, pick a year. I mean, again, I've said this multiple times. Like, I can't say enough about him, our relationship, the ability to communicate with each other on a day-to-day basis. You know, I'm sure he gets sick of me because, you know, we communicate a lot. But it's all through the vein of we just want to make sure we're making the right decision for the Houston Texans, not what's best for the player, what's best for me, what's best for D'Amico. In the end, what's best for the collective whole. And that's how we approach it. I mean, we literally talk every day. We talk this morning. Hey, what are your thoughts? Anybody on the wire? Piques your interest? All right, great. Well, here's this group of players that we're looking at. Hey, take a look at it. What do you think? It's very communicative. It's very fluid. There's a lot of information that goes back and forth. And that's how it should be. So my job is to support him as much as possible. And we're just trying to put the best, you know, best team together for the entire group and for the whole. But, I mean, can't say, I mean, I love the guy. I mean, I love working with him, love everything he's about. And again, it's not like year one to year two, this like big change. Honestly, he's probably been the same guy since he was here when he was drafted by the Texans however many years ago. So that's what you love about him. I think that's what players appreciate about, I would say specifically him or any coach, or just looking for some level of consistency on a day-to-day basis. And he has that in spades.
There you go. All Nick right. Caserio earlier today, after the 53-man roster cutdown. Quickly, anything major hit your ear?
Well, obviously the Noah Brown thing. That you could tell that just really pained him, but had to make that call. And as we talked about at the top of the show, they clearly are going to continue to make some moves. I mean, that's obvious, but it's very clear. And as we speak, they're bringing guys into the practice squad. Some they're you know are familiar names that were here, and some are not. So yeah, they're definitely going to try to keep that thing going. By the way, also practicing. Jeff Okuda's practicing today. Will Anderson is suited up to practice, but mostly just doing drills, but it looks like they're ramping him up. And Tim Settle is practicing. So the team is getting their stuff together for the opener.
Okay. Well, we'll give you some more on the actual names of who's being signed to the practice squad or who's expected to be signed to the practice squad. Some more updates on that coming up next. You're listening to In the Loop on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, we get you what's popping.
The biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Poppin'.
What's Poppin' In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. John Lopez, Figgy Fig. I'm Reginald Atatula. Let's talk about what's happening with this Texans team. We mentioned that there's some moving and shaking when it comes to getting this thing ready. Once you cut down to the initial 53, your job is not done at all. We heard Nick Caserio talking about the idea of possibly adding depth, and he the words that I heard him use were, you know, in the next week or in this week or next week,
yeah,
like the idea of maybe working some folks out. So as you mentioned, right, team building never stops in some ways, and so I would still be on the lookout in some ways for that. For maybe some news on that front. He didn't commit to anything. He's like, you know, if there's something to be done, we will. And if there's not, we will not. But practice squad needs to be put together. And it looks like the Texans are doing some of the preliminary additions there. Yeah. As Ali Gay is expected to be back on the practice squad, as is Troy Hairston. A dude who, you know, maybe did not cover himself in glory in the back half of the preseason.
That's one way to put it, yeah.
trying to be kind about
cover
it in some way.
Cover himself in glory.
He probably didn't do it exactly that way. But, I mean, he is a fullback, and having that as, like, a backup, I imagine, is going to be helpful, especially practice squad-wise. Johnny Johnson, wide receiver.
Saw that one,
should be
yeah.
back. David Sharp, the offensive lineman, should be on the practice squad as well. Max Tooley, linebacker, is going to be on the practice squad. And I think that's going to be helpful as well when we talk about linebacker depth. I mean, at least having another guy that you can elevate if you absolutely need to when you get to that place. Marcus Harris, a dude that you liked quite a bit.
I think he's still working on, or is he back officially?
They hope to sign him.
Yeah. That's one that I think is going to be relatively important for the interior of the defensive line, especially until Danico Ryans comes back. But we'll see, you know, at what point they might tap into that.
Yeah, and an interesting one, special teams veteran Zeke Turner is expected to be on this practice squad. And so, yeah, I thought that was interesting. I think he originally signed with the Cardinals when he first got into the league. He was last with the Niners in camp this year. And, of course, there's a little bit of synergy when you look at the Niners and the way they go about things just generally than with the Texans. One thing that I did find interesting, though, Lonnie Johnson, who was with this team, is not going to be back.
Mm-hmm. He's going to... I think he's going to Carolina.
The
Panthers. Yeah, Carolina. Well, and Lonnie Johnson, I mean, he might find a better opportunity, you know, with the Panthers. That's he's got a say in this as well, man. At least with his agent, you know, on his behalf.
And I guess I was doing some bad reading there. Ollie Gay was awarded to the Titans on waivers, not the Texans. So my apologies there.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's going to be over there giving trade secrets.
Yeah, I wonder if there was an erroneous report, because I saw the same thing, that Ollie Gay was going to return here. So maybe it shifted and there was some bad reporting there. But he was, you know.
And that was as of 11:41, so literally 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, so I'm sure that's accurate. But I had seen it something different as well earlier. But look, man, there are certain areas where you're not doing your job if you're not getting players stacked at that position on the practice squad, namely linebacker. I mean, linebacker is an issue right now. Who knows with Christian Harris? You know, we would expect him back, but he came back for what, one day, Figgy, during training camp?
Yeah.
And then got hurt aggravated the injury the same day. So you got to keep an eye on that. So linebacker, you better stack him up. You better stack him up on the practice squad.
Yeah, for sure. Some other things that are popping last night. Got shut out by the Phillies. The Astros did. 5-0 was the final. Yeah. Verlander goes 5 innings. And it really was just a very tough, was it third inning? I was about to say first inning, but that was the first inning I saw because I keep forgetting that these are East Coast games where it's a little bit earlier, so I'm tapping in a little late. But no, I unfortunately tapped in just in time to see Justin Verlander basically have one bad pitch pitch that was not quite located quite how he wanted to.
And it was tattooed.
Yeah, it was absolutely tattooed by none other than Nick Castellanos. Mm-hmm. Who else, right? And that basically did most of it, right? That was 4 runs there. Only Taylor Scott and Caleb Ferguson come out of the pen because the pen was just super taxed, and I think that was all she wrote when it comes from the Astros side. Although you want to give credit where credit is due, Aaron Nola, 7 innings, 6 strikeouts, but like that's a tough pitcher doing his work, and I think ultimately that's one of those where you can't be too mad about. Although again, it kind of goes into the larger theme of this is a really good team that you're going up against, and in this instance, you just kind of got beat up.
Yeah, Nola was outstanding. I mean, it was beautiful to watch if you're not pulling for the Astros, but he was outstanding. The Astros right now, what is it, 8 out of 12 now that they've lost?
That is...
I believe it's in that neighborhood. I could be off a little bit.
Yeah, I need to double check on that one.
And I think what's, you know, I mentioned this earlier, that it's just like, You're so bad down on this team early in the season, and then it's like, oh my gosh, here they come, the old Astros. Well, I think what we're seeing is it's never going to be, not this year, it's never going to be the old Astros. There's going to be some old Astros traits that we see, namely from, you know, if Yordan gets hot again, and obviously Bregman has been hot, Altuve heats up. Those guys are going to show you some of the old Astros traits, but there are a lot of dudes on this squad that are going to have to learn those traits on the fly because they're just not quite at that level yet of the Phillies and the upcoming schedule, which is not getting easier. Kansas City, Arizona, San Diego, and Cleveland are on the docket. Yeah, it's going to be a test. It's going to be a test.
Absolutely. 6 of their last 8 lost is what you're looking at there. And, of course, that deals with, you know, these last 2 games against Philly, the series in Baltimore as well, and then dips into that Boston series as well. So, yeah, look, this is a tough stretch, and I think this was the first game in a little bit where it felt like they just kind of got absolutely handled, and Aaron Nola will do a little bit of that. It's the reason why he has 12 wins thus far in the season.
Yeah, it is.
They got a day game today, a little earlier, 3:05 first pitch. Arrighetti's up against Walker. Taiwan Walker?
You need Eric.
Okay, that is Taiwan Walker.
Eric Geddy to be the stopper, baby.
Yeah,
you would have thought that. That kind of feeds into like there are new new faces here and new roles, you know, that are crucial at this point.
Well, I mean, Arrieta, you would need him to play well, but really I think the offense needs to come alive is really the thing that I'm looking at more than anything. Another thing that's popping, Tilma Fertitta recently was talking about UH, because, you know, big time booster there.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this interesting. He said that, you know, getting monies to players is a bigger priority than new facilities, right? Like, we have to raise a bunch of money for NIL, he said. If we don't raise money for NIL, we're not going to be successful. These college athletes are no different than basketball players. What does a kid want to come out and be playing in the G League or as a two-way player when he can make money more staying in college and playing for the Houston Cougars? Basically, mm-hmm. pointed to the idea that UH broke ground on the new $140 million football operations center, all that. But at this point, I think he's right. I think he has the right perspective in this because, look, man, as we've been trying to say, these college athletes, man, they are employees.
They are.
And just like any other employee, like, where I'm going to work is nice, but ultimately the most important thing when I'm doing this calculus, what is my compensation?
It's easy math. Yeah, it's easy math. And he's not wrong. But I thought he said something that I was kind of like, he knows better than that. Maybe he's just trying to emphasize the point. Because he went on to talk about how you kind of have to scratch your head. Do we really need to be spending $140 million on a football facility? Or should we take that from all the donors and use it on NIL? I think he realizes the facilities are part of the recruiting process. The biggest part at some point, I mean, these days, is probably NIL, if we're being honest.
Sure.
But at the same time, they get big in, they being athletes, get big NIL money at various places. Now, they might choose U of H because of some sort of connection there or whatever. But the facilities are part of that. It's almost like NFL free agency. Where am I going to be most comfortable? Where is it going to fit my style of game? And how is it there? You know, what's it look like? And in college, more so than anywhere else, you need these top-notch facilities too. So you need both pools of money. You need the facility money, you need the NIL money.
But previously, because the labor force was artificially capped with spending, at least when it came to over the table, right? Under the table. We could talk about all the different
all
ways
day
that
long.
People paid. But it was capped, so all of the money that was coming in had to be thrown in these places like facilities.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what he might be advocating for, maybe I'm just putting words into his mouth, is we need to find a way to balance that out a little bit. We don't need to be adding swimming pools and slides like teams have been doing for a long time to try and get players that way. Those things are nice, but now that you could just take that money and give it to the players, you should do that. Make sure the facilities are adequate and do what they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Is $440 million the right number on that end?
I think you got to have both. Now, they're in the Big 12 now, man. I mean, they're big time. You know, there's going to be teams with these athletes, with these recruits, that are going to be able to match or come very, very close to the money that they get via NIL. The deal breaker might be what is best for me to become the best player, and that includes facilities. You know, I it's not like the old days where facilities were kind of the wow factor of recruiting, and then the under the table money, of course, would be there too. But like that was kind of like, oh wow, that is a slick place. I want to play there. No, it's not to that point, but you still got to have top notch stuff to capture the eyes of these guys.
Yeah, it's an interesting new world when it comes to college sports, and UH is trying to get to that place. I've always said that the University of Houston has never been lacking on want to.
No.
Right? When University of Houston used to have that locker room handing out envelopes.
Yeah, they did.
Want to was never an issue, but I think at this point, like, Tilman Fertitta points to a good idea. Like, the want to is good, but you want to make sure that want to is distributed in the right way to make things happen. There you go. That's what's popping. I mean, I kind of wanted to be a little salacious real quick and throw in the idea that, you know, Megan Thee Stallion did one of them.
I saw this. Explain one of them TikTok.
I don't know. Challenge is the right word, but like trends where, you know, you do like a couple survey, and it looked like she was hanging out with a Bulls player, Torrey Craig, which for those of us Houstonian men that are single out here that were hoping that maybe Megan Thee Stallion would end up in a place where she would be,
that might not be,
no pun intended.
That might not be.
Yeah.
She loved them Tories.
All right, okay, that's where we need to leave this.
Lopez said, "Do she got a shot?"
All right, in the loop, Sports Radio 610. Y'all both wilding. I'm sick of y'all. Coming up next, ESPN put out a list of the top 100 players in the NFL. How many Texans are on the list, and what does it say about this Texans roster that you just cut down to 53? We'll talk about that next.